Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hello, friends. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. All of you, we have members in Taiwan who are experiencing tremendous earthquakes and upheaval right now. There are so many areas in the world at large that are either at war or natural disasters are happening. It's not unique to this week or this month. It's been happening for the last decade or so, from fires to all sorts of, whether you're into the climate science or not, tragedy is happening in all sorts of ways. I don't mean to minimize what's happening in Taiwan right now, or anywhere for that matter. We have this Sangha, our friends, are all over the world, worldwide. And so my heart, mind goes out to all of you in those various regions. I'm always thinking about you guys. And I'm concerned. And so the best advice I can, and what I always say in these videos is, keep your practice strong. Thank you for studying, for coming here, for using the website, for using the bookstore and so forth. Because that's going to be your strongest, your best protection for your quality of life. Yeah. So, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo for all of you. The epilogue to the Lotus Law Flower Dharma Sutra, the Sutra of Meditation on the Bodhisattva Universal Virtue, or Universal Worthy. They seem to be the same person sometimes, distinguished maybe just slightly in the context of that personage, but we started, if you'll recall, with the prologue, basically setting up this shift of the teachings, this paradigm, if you will, that the teachings had been leading to all along, but that because of traditions and religions and societies and cultures, prior to Shakyamuni's advent to teach Buddhism, just had a lot of trouble letting go of ingrained training. Yeah. And in fact, the statement is made in the Lotus Proper that an intermediate goal was set just to allow for time for students to make that mental shift themselves. Didn't happen, or maybe it did, but not throughout the monastic society, if you will. So the Lotus is, okay, now we can get back to business, to the ultimate goal of what we're doing here, and stop, you know, fooling around. You're ready. You're ready. You don't need this intermediate goal anymore. And so the prologue basically goes through and talks about this great vehicle sutra and how this is the ultimate teaching. In fact, the first chapter of the Lotus Sutra proper calls upon this meditation of the great vehicle, right, the samadhi, to explore, expatiate, define the great vehicle teaching. And so you can look at the entire Lotus Sutra as this mental exercise to make this shift in focus to what it was meant to be all along, and that is what we repeatedly hear, the single-minded Buddha-ness, yeah? single-minded instantiation of Buddha mind, to put it another way. And we've read throughout the 28 chapters of the Lotus what it means to be able to show others how to come to this resolution, what it is to actually practice this resolute method of awakening, and how, as Saha beings, bodhisattvas, we are to comport ourselves and teach others, lead others, probably a better word, to discover this within themselves. And now, in the epilogue, much like the prologue, we're going to look back on what we've learned and pull out important points that were made for the benefit of those leaders of this massive assembly to keep in mind and utilize in that day once Shakyamuni is extinct, gone, not there as a teacher. They have to take on that role. Now, the Mahaparivanirvana Sutra is basically a long discourse of the preparation and the teaching, reminding everyone, Lotus Sutra is what you do after I'm gone. A predominant theme in the Mahaparinirvana is this worry of this huge assembly. Oh, what are we going to do when you're gone? We won't have you. We won't have you. Ah. The epilogue of the Lotus Sutra captures that as well, but in the context of I've just shown you, I've just taught you. It doesn't really elaborate another story like he does in the Mahaparinirvana, probably meant to be a more general teaching for that kind of question, to soften the blow, as it were, of the fact that he made very clear in the Lotus, I'm not Buddha, I'm Shakyamuni, I'm Siddhartha Gautama, I'm a man. Buddha is everywhere all the time. It's you. You just have to turn it on. But people like their attachments, yeah? No, you're Buddha. You give me Buddha-ness, right? We wrestled with that in the Lotus. You would think we're done with that now. You get it, but, right? It takes time. The mind can be a stubborn thing. So this is the predominant question at the end of the Lotus Sutra and the reason for the final teaching, sermon, recap, if you will, of the Mahaparinirvana. This is what you do when I'm gone. And sure enough, the first thing we run into in this meditation of the Bodhisattva Universal Virtue or Worthy is this very thing. Bodhisattva Universal Worthy or Virtue is, as I stated in the last video, a personification of the Tathagata in human form. Just as Shakyamuni was a personification of Buddha-ness, right? So I subtitled this chapter, Locating Conviction Within One's Practice, lest you forget to look there. And it begins, thus have I heard, once the Buddha was staying at the two-storied assembly hall in the Great Forest Monastery in Vaishali. Then he addressed all the bhikshus and bhikshunis, saying, after 3 months, I shall surely enter Parinirvana. Oh, this is real. The Lotus Sutra teaching is done. He's now preparing to exit the world, the Saha world. Wow, this isn't just talk anymore. This is real, right? People are somewhat shocked. Why? Defies reason for us modern people, but still you could sympathize, you could empathize, if you will, with this becoming not just fanciful mental talk, but reality. So who do you think is the first to speak up? Thereupon the honored Ananda rose from his seat, straightened his garment, and with joined palms and folded hands, he made procession around the Buddha three times and saluted him, kneeling with folded hands, and attentively gazed at the Tathagata, as the embodied as Shakyamuni Buddha, without turning away his eyes for a moment. A look of great expectation, yeah? The elder Mahakashyapa and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Maitreya also rose from their seats and with folded hands saluted and gazed up at Shakyamuni Buddha's honored face. Then the three great leaders with one voice spoke to Shakyamuni Buddha saying, "World-honored one, after the extinction of the Tathagata, how can living beings raise the mind of the Bodhisattva? Practice the sutras of great extent, the great vehicle, which as we learned in the prologue and throughout the Lotus Sutra is the Lotus Sutra, and ponder the world of one reality with right thought." Right? The one reality, moment to moment, instantiations of potential. That's the one reality, yeah, the one world. How can they keep from losing the mind of Supreme Buddhahood? What are we going to do when you're gone? We won't have an example. We won't have somebody to usher us on the right path and keep it. How, without cutting off their earthly cares and renouncing their five desires, can they also purify their organs and destroy their errors or delusions? In other words, how can we remain human in the Saha world and achieve what you have achieved? Well, didn't Shakyamuni make that clear throughout the Lotus? What did this be? Were they not listening? So the Buddha says to Ananda, and watch the grammatical cues here. He says, "Do you listen to me attentively?" Now, there's not a question mark at the end of that sentence. There's an exclamation mark or point. Right? It's like, it's insulting at this point. Do you listen to me attentively? What are you doing, picking your nose while I'm talking? Was I not clear? Or what would we say? Did I stutter? Of course, I'm not being disrespectful. I just want you to understand, when you read this, don't read it dry. Pay attention. This is a huge drama. This is a storytelling medium. And so, if you were Shakyamuni talking to all of these people with all of their questions and your deep probing answers and profound stories and tales to open the mind, all this time spent, how can you not understand yet, right? But remember, this is an epilogue. So in a way, it's also a review. So let's not be too heavy about it. Ananda isn't that thick. It's just that the epilogue's duty is to go over the hurdles we have overcome. So expect that we're going to hear some repetition of main points. And those main points will be addressing the main questions we just read about how can the people maintain bodhisattva? How can they reach for Buddhahood? How can they get their senses purified? So now Shakyamuni is going to answer those point by point, as he did in the larger spread of the 28 chapters, but now kind of concise, a recap, if you will. Yeah. So then he says again, do you listen to me attentively, ponder and remember it? Now that's significant because Ananda is the one who is largely historically credited as the foremost in recollection used for the transcription of these verbal teachings in writing. So it's no idle. And another exclamation point. Of long ago on Mount Grigrakuta, Vulture Peak, and in other places, the Tathagata Buddha had already extensively explained the way of one reality. I've already done this. But now in this place, to all living beings and others in the world to come, you and I, who desire to practice the supreme law of the great vehicle, which again is the lotus, the Myoho Rengekyo, yes, and to those who desire to learn the works of universal virtue, in other words, our example given earlier as how to conduct ourselves with this new method, this comprehensive method of self-realization, enlightenment, and to follow the works of universal virtue, I will now teach the law that I have entertained. I will now widely make clear to you the matter of eliminating numerous errors or delusions from anyone who may happen to see or not see universal virtue. Again, this is the universal enlightenment engine of life in all phenomena. Ananda, exclamation point. The Bodhisattva universal virtue was born in the eastern pure wonder land, whose form I have already clearly and extensively explained in the Sutra of Miscellaneous Flowers. Oh, interesting callback, isn't it? Now, I've mentioned this several times as I've been sharing my insights into Gosho and this Lotus Sutra. The Sutra of Miscellaneous Flowers is one of the appellations of the Avatamsaka Sutra, the very first teaching in Japan known as the Kigon Sutra, in various parts of China known as the Flower Garland Sutra, and other names as well. Now, in this sutra, we'll briefly explain it again. Ananda, exclamation point. If there be bhikshus, bhikshunis, upasakas, upasikas, the eight groups of universal realms of influence and dragons and all living beings who recite the great vehicle, Myoho Rengekyo, practice it, aspire to it, delight to see the form and body of the bodhisattva universal virtue, self-realization and comportment of such, have pleasure in seeing the stupa of the Buddha abundant treasures, stupa of seven jewels, yes, take joy in seeing a Shakyamuni Buddha and the Buddhas who emanated from him, in other words, the Tathagata-ness in all of us, and rejoice to obtain the purity of the six organs, they must learn this meditation. What does he mean by this meditation? rejoice to obtain the purity of the sixth. All of this from the beginning. Delight to see. What does he start with? Recite the great vehicle, practice it, aspire to it. Then blah, 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 blah. They must learn this meditation. What meditation? The great vehicle. Practice it, aspire to it, recite the great vehicle. That is the meditation. Namo myoho renge kyo. The merits of this meditation will make them free from all hindrances and make them see the excellent forms. How many of you have emailed me or asked questions in the comments or wondered to yourself, what should be going on in my head when I chant? When I chant to mandala, when I open my butsudan, when I place myself respectfully in front of the mandala with Shakyamuni and abundant treasures looking back at me, with the treasure tower down the center, seven jewels of Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. What should I be thinking? And what do I always tell you? Buddha me. Awaken Buddha. Single-mindedly meet your Buddha mind. Kick open that Gohansan door and open your Buddha eye. That is all you are to do. Why? He says it right here. The merits of this meditation will make them free from all hindrances and make them see the excellent forms. What else could you possibly be focused upon? It's all subsumed in your awakening Buddha. Period. Full stop. End of sentence. Even though they have not yet entered into the contemplation, just because they recite and keep the great vehicle, they will devote themselves to practicing it, and after having kept their minds continuously on the great vehicle for a day or 3 times 7 days, they will be able to see universal virtue. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Do you listen to me attentively? Right? I didn't invent any of this. It's pretty clear. Oh, I have an annotation. What could I possibly have said? The clear statement here of the entire Lotus Sutra being itself the meditation for emancipation. Oops, got a little typo there. And awakening of Buddha-ness is certainly more validation of Nichiren's doctrine of invocation of the title, Myoho Renge Kyo, being the essential practice. Nichiren, right? Remember the Gosho he wrote to an elderly woman who was asking him, well, I read this chapter, that chapter, I try to read the whole sutra, blah, 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 blah. And he broke down 3 different levels of practice or types of practice. He didn't call them levels, types of practice, right? The comprehensive practice, the abbreviated practice. And the essential practice. You remember? You read the whole sutra every day, Lotus Sutra, and everything that supports it, if you like. That's comprehensive. That's scholastic, deep immersion into this practice, yes? In our modern era, hard to find time to do all that. You could just, the 2 essential chapters of the Lotus Sutra, the 2nd and the 16th chapter, where most of Nichiren's doctrine is developed for the way that we practice. It doesn't negate any of the other chapters. They're just essential. That's our gongyo. along with Daimoku, of course. And then the essential, he wrote a whole Gosho about it, the essential, the one essential phrase, which Shakyamuni talks about all the time. Just the Daimoku. If you could just chant the Daimoku. This is the basis for it right here. This is what we're reading. Those who have a heavy impediment will see him after 7 times 7 days. So now he's programmatically taking them to task on if you have some serious issues to your happiness, to your full realization of your potential, then it will take you 7 times 7 days of this meditation. Again, those who have a heavier one, an impediment, will see him after one birth or a cycle of birth and death or moment to moment, right? Again, those who have a much heavier one will see him after 2 births. In other words, it'll take just more meditation to overcome whatever it is. Understand that what he's addressing here is that when we sense we have an obstacle or a problem that we have to resolve, what we're essentially battling in order to get past those impediments is our feverish obsession and attachment to the problem. Isn't that absurd? However, recognizing that, you'll just need to chant longer. Chant until, I had a very wise leader tell me one time, chant until you feel the joy. A super simple statement. Almost too simple, right? Because we like complexity, don't we? Basically, he was saying, sweeten your tea until you overcome the salt. Sweet. You need to chant as much as you need to chant. You need to recite as much as you need to recite. Only you can awaken your Gohanzon portal, your Buddha eye. And whatever karmic freight train you have to challenge, disassemble, decloud in your way, that's yours to do. You don't have to know what it is, how it is, blah, 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 especially why. Forget why. Just single-mindedly awaken Buddha, your Buddha mind. Everything else just gets resolved. Don't think about it. Think about Buddha mind. How long does it take you to finally do that? The moment you do, you'll feel it physically. Because you'll physically let go of your hanging on and possession of the obstacle. That's why you suffer. You're not letting it go. How much chanting do you have to do for you in your mind to go, oh, just Buddha. Oh. Again, those who have still heavier impediments will see him after 3. Getting over the cycle of birth, death, right? Thus, the repercussions of their karma is various and not equal. For this reason, I teach the teaching variously. Again, a simple statement, but understand what he just said. The repercussions of their karma, your karma, my karma, her karma, those, is various. So not only is our karmic freight train extremely similar from one to another, but unique to each of us, so too are the moment-to-moment-to-moment-to-moment-to-moment influences that we've adopted, that we've pushed in, that we've colored our karmic momentum. And so if we're going to find ourselves with an obstacle, a problem, whatever you want to call it, you see, if you follow the science, as it were, of Buddhism, you will realize that all of those stresses and anxieties and problems and health issues and so on and so forth, the reason they're obstacles is in your mind. And that mind has recorded all sorts of possessions and obsessions and ownership through these various mechanisms, your various repercussions, as it were, of karma. Now, you want to undo that stuff. You don't even remember the decisions you made, right? Epistemology. Check Buddhism reference for a definition of that. You don't have to. You don't have to figure it out. Because we have this magic little string that ties us to the very origins of the cosmos. And like a guitar, if you just pluck it, all of that will just go floof, like snow off a branch that a squirrel lands on, or, right? It just poof. Because it's all illusion anyway. What we're getting rid of is our possession, our attachment to it. That's what's causing the suffering. Buddhism 101. So please, just talk to yourself, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, and instantiate your Buddha eye. And whatever it is that's creating an obstacle will get shaken off the tree. Now, maybe your particular karmic, what is it? Your various repercussions? Maybe it's the whole frickin' tree. Maybe you've got a forest of repercussion. So you may have to chant longer. You may have to vibrate that entire forest before everything's green. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Or maybe it's just a few branches. The answer is always the same. The Bodhisattva universal virtue is boundless in size of his body, boundless in the sound of his voice, and boundless in the form of his image. Because it ain't a he. It's a priori law. It is the engine of life. The engine of life never changes. If the engine of life changes, then it's no longer the engine of life. So, engine of life never changes. It's like the one perfectly tuned E string on your guitar. It will always be, it'll always be E. It will never go out of tune. Because nothing affects it or affects it. The only thing that gets affected or affected is samsara, and that's occurring in your mind, not in the cosmos. Desiring to come to this world, he makes use of his free transcendent powers and shrinks his stature to the small size of a human being instantiated from the universal engine of life, or Tathagata suchness. Right? This is the storytelling, yes? Because the people in Jampadvipa have the three heavy hindrances, you remember what those are, this is so human, arrogance, greed, envy, and covetousness, give me that, the world of anger. That's our three basic yuckinesses. Okay? We've got suchnesses, we've got yuckinesses. By his wisdom power, in other words, the wisdom power of the engine of life, that doesn't pay attention to all that, he appears transformed as mounted on a white elephant, right? A great, rare animal in those days. The elephant has six tusks, suggesting the purity of those skandhas, right? Well, more than the skandhas, six senses, yes. And seven legs, suggesting the absence of the seven deluded, malicious, killing, stealing, committing adultery, lying, all those evils, yes? Those things that spawn our obsessions, our anxieties, so on and so forth. Supports its body on the ground with those seven legs. In other words, samsaric existence on the Saha world. Under its seven legs, seven lotus flowers grow. Oh, how is that? The elephant is white as snow, the most brilliant of all shades of white, so pure that even crystal and the Himalayan mountains cannot be compared with it. So this is it's an imaginary elephant, obviously, but a very sacred, powerful image, yes? The body of the elephant is 450 yohanas in length and 400 yohanas in height. Okay, remember, yohanas is approximately 8 miles. So, yeah, this ain't a real thing. But imagine, if you would, yeah? At the end of the six tusks, there are six bathing pools. In each bathing pool grow 14 lotus flowers, exactly the size of the pools. The flowers are in full bloom as the king of celestial trees. On each of these flowers is a precious daughter, whose countenance is red as crimson and whose radiance surpasses that of nymphs. In the hand of that daughter there appears, transformed of themselves, five harps, and each of them has 500 musical instruments as accompaniment. There are 500 birds, including ducks, wild geese, and mandarin ducks, all having the color of precious things, arising among the flowers and leaves. On the trunk of the elephant there is a flower, and its stalk is the color of the red jewel. That golden flower is still a bud and has not yet blossomed. Having finished beholding this matter, if one again further regrets one's errors or delusions, meditates on the great vehicle attentively, with entire devotion, and ponders it in his mind incessantly, single-minded, he will be able to see the flower instantly blossom and light up with a golden color. Another beautiful illustration of opening the Buddha eye. And I'll end with this annotation. To ponder in one's mind incessantly, quote unquote, is a theme often referred to in the doctrine of Nichiren in various forms, from the direct quote of single-minded focus on Buddha, to his statement that he himself felt as though he was living each moment of the day in Myoho Rengekyo. Do you remember him writing that? And his repeated exhortations to stay strong-willed and resolved in our practice. So yes, this is an epilogue and we're not done yet, but we'll start again in the next video at the cup of the lotus flowers, a cup of Kimshuka gems with wonderful Brahma jewels, and the stamens are of diamond, and so on and so forth. Now, you can see the reference he made to the Avatamsaka. The Avatamsaka, please take time to read that sutra one day, is so voluminous in its adjectives and personifications. It's easy to get lost in it. You forget all about the fact that it's trying to transfer knowledge or teach something. You just get lost in the illusions, yes? And so he's using a little bit of that here. It's reminiscent, yes? Anyway, we'll continue in the next one. Thank you for listening. Please stay focused on your Buddha mind. Take care of your health. I wish you safety in our tumultuous world today. I know that you will be safe, ultimately, by keeping your practice strong, taking care of your health. Thank you for supporting this channel, this effort, the podcast, the bookstore, the website, all of it, all the links in the description. Please make use of this resource to solve any doubts that you have, to strengthen your confidence, awaken your Buddha mind, yeah? All right. That's all for me today. Namo Myōrenge Kyō. I'll see you soon in the next one. Bye for now.